and both felt deeply into the Force. As one, they raised their hands, summoned their collective power, and loosed a sudden blast that was more powerful than a grenade. Rock and dirt exploded outward, no doubt traveling high into the night sky. Beyond, they could see the trunks of trees and falling rain.
"It's clear, Sergeant," said the Emperor with a smile.
Concerned that the lilac carcasses would eventually attract scavengers, maybe Gutkurs again, Gaul led Isfahl and Cham a few kilometers away from the ravine and into the forest. Thunder rumbled, lightning veined the sky. The rain eventually worked its way through the canopy and turned the forest floor sodden. The air smelled of loam.
"The weather is going to make scanning for Veda from the ships even more difficult," Isfahl said.
Cham only nodded, preoccupied with end games and exits. He didn't see one, and he very much wanted to.
"What's on your mind?" Isfahl asked.
Cham forced a false smile. "Tomorrow." Now it was Isfahl's turn to nod and say nothing. Cham had called a halt here, figuring there was little point in wandering aimlessly through the forest. They'd lost the Emperor's trail. It would have to be found by air or not at all. Meanwhile, they'd wait. Isfahl, of course, tried to pace away her impatience. Gaul's team sat on logs and tended their gear.
"We should keep moving," Isfahl said,
pausing in front of Cham.
"To where?"
Cham asked her. She grunted and continued pacing. Cham allowed himself to consider the possibility that Vader and the Emperor were dead, devoured by the lilacs deep underground. He doubted it, but the uncertainty gnawed at him. He was running out of time to bring events to a close. Eventually, the Equatorial Communications Hub would get a dish back up and override Callan's jamming signal. At that point, a coordinated search and rescue would begin in earnest. He'd have no room to maneuver then. Two, he figured that word of the destruction of the Perilous had reached Coruscant, and that at that very moment, Imperial ships and soldiers were being prepped to come to Ryloth, if they weren't already en route. Once they arrived, they'd try to blockade the whole system. And then, they'd scour it for Cham's people.
Exits.
End games. He had hours at best, if he wanted to give his people a chance to get clear. He felt the day and events slipping out of his grasp, and he was tired, damn tired. His comm link with Callan and Phelan pinged.
"Go,"
he said into it. Isfahl stopped pacing and stared at him, as tense as a drawn bowstring.
"Cham,"
Callan's voice called over the comm.
"I just had an explosion on scan."
Cham's heartbeat accelerated. His leku flicked with excitement.
"You're sure? How far?"
5 clicks from your location. Precise coordinates incoming."
"What is it?"
Isfahl asked, having heard only Cham's half of the conversation.
"What is it?"
Cham held up a finger for her to be patient.
"Callan, just note the location. Do not approach on your own. Acknowledge?"
"Not even a little peek?"
"Callan, if that's Vader, he took 2 ships down while he was on the ground, and he survived the attack of a lilac horde. Do not approach. We have to play this just right. Acknowledge."
"Acknowledged. You want a ride?"
"We can cover 5 clicks on foot faster than if you come back here to pick us up. Just set down and stay on comm.
Phelan, get in the vicinity, but not too close."
"Got it,"
Phelan said. Cham cut the communication and explained to Isfahl what he'd heard from Callan.
"Could be something unrelated," he cautioned, seeing her flush with excitement.
She nodded, her fidgeting stilled by the prospect of action.
"But it might be them. It probably is. And we've got nothing else. Gaul, get your people up. We're moving.
Gaul and his troops readied their gear and formed up.
Belcor? Isfal asked Cham.
Right,
he said to Isfal, and raised Belcor on the encrypted comm. Put yourself down. We have something we're checking out. Just be ready if I call.
Wait, Syndulla, I...
Cham cut the connection and imagined Belcor shouting at him from the cockpit. But Belcor was unstable, and Cham didn't trust him not to foul things. The Imperial might make a run at Vader and the Emperor before Cham was ready, or he might compromise their position early. Cham just needed Belcor in reserve with his V-wings, ready for a call. At this point, Cham regarded Belcor as a hammer. He decided he wouldn't get the Imperial involved until he had a nail he wanted struck.
Let's go, he said to Gaul and Isfal. Quickly now.
Vader, the Emperor, and Deez walked out of the tunnel and into the forest. Thunder boomed and a hard rain fell, causing the leaves above them to rustle.
Which direction, my lords? Deez asked.
Before either of them could answer, a green-skinned Twi'lek girl, perhaps in late adolescence, emerged from the underbrush. She wore a weathered rain parka and had a long-barreled Clone Wars-era blaster pistol on her hip. Field gear stuck out of her backpack. The end of a carved wooden tube, almost like a musical instrument, stuck out of the pack too. Seeing Vader and the Emperor and Deez, her big eyes widened and her leku twitched, but to her credit, she didn't run. Deez started to level his rifle, but Vader grabbed the guard's arm, halting him. That seemed to put the girl a bit less on edge, though she looked ready to bolt if she needed to. Vader sensed more curiosity in the girl than fear.
Who are you? Deez asked.
Who are you?
The girl responded, her accent so thick that Vader found it hard to understand her at first.
What are you doing out here? Are you lost?
The girl apparently did not recognize the Emperor or his companions. She must have been from one of the remote settlements that were known to dot Ryloth's wilderness.
Come here, girl,
the Emperor said, putting the power of the Force into his command. Unable to resist, the girl walked out of the tree line until she stood small and vulnerable before him. With preternatural speed, the Emperor drew, ignited, and slashed at the girl with his lightsaber. But Vader had sensed his master's intent and moved with greater speed, igniting his own blade and intercepting his master's blow before it could land. The girl, under the sway of the Emperor's power, seemed scarcely to notice the danger. She simply stood there, staring vacantly, her face aglow in the red light of the crossed blades. The Emperor's mouth twisted in a snarl, and Vader felt his power gathering. Behind Vader, Deez raised his rifle and aimed it at Vader's back. But Vader stretched his free hand back and unleashed a blast of power that lifted the guardsman from his feet and flung him into the trees. Branches cracked audibly under the impact of Deez's body. Vader and his master stared at each other across the sizzling glow of their crossed blades.
Has it come to this?
His master said. He sounded calm, almost resigned, but not at all surprised. The tone surprised Vader.
Forgive me, Master.
He deactivated his blade.
I think the girl can be of use to us.
Do you?
The Emperor asked softly.
There must be a village nearby. If they have a ship.
Deez climbed to his feet and staggered out of the brush, groaning. He leveled his blaster rifle uncertainly at Vader, looking to the Emperor for a directive. His master's scowl lingered for a moment before twisting into a half-smile that didn't reach his eyes. He gestured at Deez to stand down, his eyes never leaving Vader's faceplate.
I agree. She can be of use to us.
The Emperor looked at his blade, at Vader, pursed his lips, and deactivated the weapon. To the girl he said, "Is your village nearby?" The Twi'lek, still under the influence of the Emperor's power and with an unblinking faraway look in her eye, nodded.
"It's not far. I was out checking hunting traps and heard a boom. I thought it was a rock slide and came to look. I saw you from the trees."
"And what did you think when you saw us?" the Emperor asked. The girl's brow creased as if she didn't understand.
"Think? I assumed you were lost, that maybe you'd crashed. Strangers are uncommon out here. You'll be welcomed at the village, though. It's custom."
His master smiled. "That's nice to hear.
How many of you are there?"
37,
the girl said.
"But Naria's with child, so it will soon be 38.
"Indeed," said the Emperor. He looked at Vader curiously.
"Master?"
Vader asked, but the Emperor ignored him.
"Maybe you have some news of what's happening in the cities?"
the girl asked.
"Maybe we do,"
the Emperor said.
"Do you have a ship in your village?"
The girl shook her head.
"No, no ship. Not even a working communicator. We lost it last year and haven't been able to get another in trade. But we have food and warmth and songs."
The Emperor smiled.
"Very good. Take us to your village."
Without another word, the girl turned and led them through the forest. Vader figured the girl's village must have been founded by slaves who'd escaped from one of Ryloth's mines, or by refugees displaced long ago during the Clone Wars. Many such villages existed on Ryloth, and many of those had little or no contact with the outside world. The Empire knew of the settlements, of course, sometimes disbanding them and relocating the people to labor camps if slave labor was needed somewhere, but generally, the Empire left them alone. The girl's village had no ship and no communicator, though, so it would be of little use to Vader and his master, except as a way stop. Still, there might be something there they could use.
"What's your name, girl?"
the Emperor asked her as they picked their way through the trees.
"Drua,"
the girl said. She looked at Deez.
"What's your name? And why do you wear that suit?"
Deez seemed momentarily taken aback by the question before saying,
"My name is Sergeant, and it's my honor to wear this armor."
The Emperor diverted the conversation.
"So you're out here on your own, Drua?"
"Of course. I know the forest as well as any."
She looked up through a hole in the forest's canopy.
"The rain is going to end within the hour."
"Where are your parents?"
the Emperor asked. And Vader thought it an odd question to come from his master. The girl did not turn back to face them, and her voice fell a bit when she said,
"My mother died 2 winters back. I didn't know my father."
"Not unlike you, apprentice,"
the Emperor said quietly. The words dredged Vader's memory. He flashed for a moment on his mother, a slave. Flashed, too, on the Tusken raiders who'd killed her. On the satisfying moments when he killed them. All of them. Every one of them.
"You live alone, then?"
the Emperor asked.
"Of course not. I live with my grandfather,"
Drua said.
"Well," said the Emperor, "we will try not to be too much of an imposition."
Cham checked their location against the coordinates on his comp.
"Getting close,"
he said to Gaul and Isfahl, who walked on either side of him. Gaul signaled to his people, who had sorted themselves into their usual skirmish line formation, to fall back some and move in silence.
"Let me check the area first,"
Gaul said to Cham, and Cham nodded. Gaul disappeared ahead into the trees and rain.
Cham marveled at Gaul's woodcraft as he and Isfal stood there under Ryloth's trees, waiting in the rain, saying nothing. Finally, Cham decided to repair the damage he'd caused earlier.
I'm sorry about what I said before.
About what?
She asked, not looking at him.
You know what? About the movement. About being tired. About the fight going on without me.
She looked at him then, her skin wet and flushed.
So, we keep on after today, no matter what happens. We can rebuild the movement.
Her eyes narrowed and she studied his face.
You're a bad liar, Syndulla. You meant what you said.
He held up his hands in protest.
No, she said. Hear me. I thought about what you said. If we kill Vader and the
when, he corrected her. When we kill Vader. She blinked.
Right. When we kill Vader and the Emperor. The Empire won't just fall down overnight. But we'll have started something, a rebellion maybe. But the rebellion will need leaders. You.
He wasn't sure what she wanted to hear, so he said nothing.
I'm not making myself clear, she said. You were right, at least in part. I see that. The movement is done after today. But that's not because it's going to die. It's because it's going to change, and it's going to spread. What we did today, what we do today, is going to ripple through the whole empire. And whatever grows out of those ripples will need leaders. You, Cham.
And you, Cham said. She shook her head, her leku waving.
I'm a fighter, not a leader, not a planner. That's you. And that's why I don't want to hear any more talk about letting someone else carry the fight. After today, we fight on different ground. And we maybe aren't the Free Ryloth movement, but we still fight.
Cham had always fought for Ryloth, and only for Ryloth, but he found Isfal's thinking contagious. Maybe a bigger picture was what he needed to consider. Earlier he thought he'd lost his purpose, but maybe in losing it, he'd found another one, a bigger one. Maybe.
I hear your words, Isfal.
Then heed them, she said. At that moment, Gaul returned from the woods. Isfal didn't wait for him to speak.
What'd you find? She asked.
An old lilac tunnel leading down. Looks like it had been blocked by a rock slide, and then cleared by an explosive.
A grenade,
Cham said.
Yeah, Gaul said. Cleared so someone could get through from underneath.
Had to be them,
Isfal said, grinning fiercely.
Gaul smiled too. I agree. Unless lots of people are wandering around in lilac nests. I found the trail leading away from the tunnel. There's more than one left in their group, but the rain makes it hard to distinguish numbers. Gonna make it hard to stay on their trail too, so we should get moving.
It occurred to Cham all of a sudden that they were as close as they'd been all day to their quarry. Half an hour, maybe an hour behind finally getting another shot at the Emperor and his right hand. He looked at Isfal, at Gaul, back at Gaul's team.
I know what you're thinking, Isfal said.
Good, because I don't,
Gaul said, looking from Isfal to Cham and back again.
You look like you've swallowed a rock, Cham.
We can do this,
Isfal said, putting a hand on his forearm.
Think through an exit is all we need to do, right?
Right, Cham agreed. And then he said the words that he always said to Belcor. Words that felt uncomfortably like a rationalization.
We've come too far to stop now. Let's go finish this.
The wind carried a soft, irritating buzz from somewhere ahead. To Vader it sounded vaguely insectoid. The buzzing rose and fell with the velocity of the wind. The sound seemed to put D's on alarm.
He held his rifle at the ready, looking hard at the trees around them, as if anticipating an attack.
Drua looked puzzled, then amused by his reaction.
There's nothing to fear. Those are lilac tubes. The sound keeps them away, irritates their brains. My grandfather says it gives them a headache, so they don't come around.
A sound keeps lilacs away, the Emperor said.
How very interesting.
Oh, it wouldn't keep one of them away if it was determined, Drua said.
Grandpa says it just steers them in another direction. Why walk into a headache, right?
The ground rose as Drua led them through the trees. Large boulders and rock piles dotted the landscape here and there, getting more frequent as they went. The buzzing sound grew louder and they soon saw the cause. Curved wooden tubes about as long as a human man's arm hung from the trees, swaying in the wind. Holes of various sizes and at various places had been bored into them. When the wind blew through the holes, the tubes emitted the irritating buzz. Looking at them all hanging there, Vader was reminded of gallows.
Puts one's teeth on edge,
the Emperor said.
What if the wind dies down, Drua?
Won't lilacs come then? Drua looked at him as if he were ridiculous.
There's always wind. And if we have to, we can run. We have a fortified place we can hide.
I see, the Emperor said. Soon the forest gave way to jagged hills of piled earth and rock. They picked their way through those until the ground fell away before them, and they found themselves looking down on an enormous steep-walled rock quarry. Two large tunnels opened near the base of the quarry on the side opposite them, dark holes, like the planet opening its mouth in a scream. Vader assumed them to be old mine shafts, and probably one of them was the fortified place Drua had mentioned. Drua's village clustered near one of the tunnels. 30 to 40 single-story structures made of stacked stone and tree limb beams, with roofs of stretched hide and bark. Raised gardens covered a sizable area of the quarry's bottom near the village. Vader saw no livestock. Torches burned along the walls of the quarry in two places, the flames dancing in the rain, marking a serpentine path along the steep walls. Torches burned at the bottom of the quarry, too, at the edges of the village. Vader could see Twi'leks moving about among the buildings. From a distance, they looked like shadows or ghosts. As he watched, a fire sprang to life in a common area, and half a dozen Twi'leks gathered around it. Ordinary people doing ordinary things. Music carried up from the quarry, the sounds of a woodwind, and then a lilting, haunting female voice.
That's Mala, singing the dirge of Veilant, Drua said.
A dirge, the Emperor said.
How very quaint.
Drua, does the village have computers? Any vehicles at all?
Drua smiled and shook her head.
No, nothing like that. We live simply.
She patted the blaster at her hip.
We make exception for some things, of course. But the elders say that too much technology makes us slaves all over again. We have our ways and they serve us well.
She led them along the lip of the quarry until they reached the torchlit path that snaked down to the bottom.
Mind your steps, she said. The way is treacherous.
The Emperor chuckled softly at that.
They picked their way down the side of the quarry, Vader and the Emperor as sure-footed as Drua, Deez nearly slipping from time to time. At the bottom, a Twi'lek man, muscular, green-skinned, and armed with a blaster pistol, met them. A carved wooden whistle hung from a lanyard around his neck. He looked with mild suspicion on Vader, the Emperor, and Deez.
Narmam, it's all right, Drua said. I found these lost souls in the forest. This is Sergeant, and...
She trailed off, perhaps realizing for the first time that she'd never gotten the names of the other two. The Emperor said,
My name is Kreta, And this, he gestured at Vader, is Irluk.
Narm's eyes narrowed, but he bowed, his leku shifting slightly, and said,
Kreta and Irluk and Sergeant, you are here, and because you are here, you are welcome. That is most gracious of you,
the Emperor said. Narm and Drua led them along the quarry's floor toward the warmth and light of the village. Narm put the whistle to his lips as they walked and blew a series of notes that Vader assumed indicated the arrival of strangers. The dirge of Vaelont trailed off.
I'm going to run ahead and gather Grandfather,
Drua said, and after a nod from Narm, she sprinted off.
Gather everyone, the Emperor called after her. I look forward to meeting them.
Meanwhile, more and more Twi'leks emerged from the buildings and congregated at the village's edge. More shadows, more ghosts, all of them apparently waiting to greet the strangers, Kreta and Irluk and Sergeant. Other than the Emperor, only Vader knew the false names were ancient Sith words that meant death and fate. Gaul moved 10 meters ahead of Cham and Isval, who walked 10 meters ahead of Gaul's people. All of them were tense, and all but Gaul had their weapons drawn and ready. Isval reminded herself that Gaul was too good to allow them to simply stumble upon Vader and the Emperor, reminded herself too that Vader and the Emperor did not know they were being hunted. Gaul picked his way through the forest ahead of them, studying leaves and branches, but mostly the ground, grunting and nodding to himself, moving them confidently through the woods.
There's four of them, but not the same four,
he said softly, returning to them for a brief update.
They lost one of the royal guards, and there's an adolescent with them now, or a small-boned female, possibly Twi'lek, but there's no way to know for sure.
How far ahead are they?
Isval asked.
Not far, Gaul said. I can scout ahead alone if Cham cut him off.
No. We stick together.
We just stay staggered.
When you see them, we stop to evaluate the situation and plan the attack. We'll get one chance only, and we have to do it exactly right. We all know what Vader can do. We need surprise if we can get it.
Isval nodded. Gaul nodded, and they set off. Gaul taking position well out in front.
Some people hunt lilacs,
Cham whispered to Isval.
Did you know that? I've heard that, yes. What are you getting at?
Why do you suppose they do that?
Cham asked.
Risk their lives that way.
The thrill, maybe,
she said.
Or to prove they can.
Maybe they think it's important somehow,
Cham said. And Isval realized he wasn't talking about lilacs, and neither was she.
They must, she said. Otherwise, it would be foolish.
Chapter 17.
Smiles and looks of wonder greeted Vader, the Emperor, and Deez as Narm led them into the village proper. The modest homes recalled to Vader the kind of home he'd had on Tatooine long ago. The Emperor smiled and nodded, returning greetings and thanking the Twi'leks for their hospitality. Vader said nothing, though he was aware that both his suit and Deez's armor were the subject of many whispered questions and pointed fingers. The Twi'leks crowded around them, interested in the strangers. Deez interposed himself as best he could between the Emperor and the villagers.
Keep some distance,
he said to the Twi'leks a bit harshly.
It's fine, Sergeant, the Emperor said. It doesn't matter. Does it, Irluk?
Vader answered with a question of his own, speaking in an old Sith tongue so only the Emperor would understand him.
You plan to kill them, Master?
I plan no such thing, apprentice.
The Emperor returned in the same language, never losing a smile.
But they will die anyway. You killed them all, the moment you spared that girl.
I don't understand.
You will. Patience, my friend.
Drua emerged from the small crowd and stood before them, her smile bright in the light of the torches. A frail, wrinkled, tan-skinned Twi'lek accompanied her, one hand on the girl's shoulder. His milky white eyes announced his blindness.
My grandfather,
Drua announced. Her grandfather bowed his head in the same fashion Narm had. Probably his Leku were signing a greeting that Vader could not discern.
Our custom is to welcome all strangers,
the grandfather said in a thin, broken voice.
But my granddaughter has shared your names, and so you are strangers no longer. Welcome, Sergeant Kreta and Irluk. The village is here, and they have seen you.
Head nods around, waving Leku, smiles. Grandfather raised his hands for quiet and continued.
The rain has stopped, and we have new friends. It is late, but it is not so late. We should celebrate and have music.
Cheers and whoops answered his words. Music started from somewhere ahead, the woodwinds they'd heard earlier, accompanied by a drum. Many of the villagers started to sing or hum and rill, their native tongue, the rising and falling melody like pouring rain and booming thunder. Drua took the Emperor by the hand and led him toward the village center. The villagers patted Vader and Deez on the shoulders as they followed, uttering words of welcome. Vader allowed himself to be led, looking into the colorful, smiling faces, knowing that he was looking at ghosts. The large fire was already burning in the village center. Two Twi'leks playing carved woodwinds stood near it, swaying to the music they made. A drummer sat between them, keeping time. Carved stumps were arranged in a circle around the fire. Vader and Deez and the Emperor were seated on them. The rest of the villagers milled around, talking and smiling. One couple even danced. Others sat on the stumps and chatted with one another. Drua's grandfather sat near Vader and the Emperor. Before Drua sat, the Emperor said to her,
Drua, perhaps you could bring Irluk, the broken communications unit you spoke of. He has skill in that regard.
Vader looked a question at his master.
Indulge me, the Emperor said to him. Drua, can you get it?
Of course,
Drua said and sped off. She returned quickly, bringing Vader a small, decades-old communicator and a box of hand tools, the kind of equipment Vader had used as a boy when he'd made things of metal, rather than being encased in it. He opened the box and took a tool in hand, finding that it felt as right as the hilt of his lightsaber. He quickly disassembled the communicator and set to work fixing it. He saw the problem right away. He'd have it operational quickly. Drua watched in wide-eyed wonder. His master leaned over and said,
I see you've retained the skills of your youth.
But nothing else from that time.
We will see,
the Emperor replied. The wind carried a faint but irritating buzzing sound from somewhere ahead.
What is that?
Isval asked Cham. Cham shrugged, brow furrowed.
Let's see what Gol says.
He signaled a halt to Gol's team, who trailed Isval and Cham. They didn't have long to wait before Gol returned from his position, scouting ahead.
What's that sound?
Cham asked. A signaling device, I think, or art or something, Gol said. Or maybe it keeps animals away. I'm not sure, but it seems harmless. And it doesn't matter because we've found them. Vader and the Emperor. We found them. Isval's heart beat against her ribs. She felt herself flush, felt the calm of action settle on her.
Cham took Gaul by the shoulders.
Where, man?
There's a gorge half a click that way. He nodded to indicate the direction. Looks like an old quarry. I saw them in it.
Saw them?
Istvan said, unable to contain herself.
Why are we waiting? Let's go! Cham, call in Belkor's V-wings. We can...
No, no, Gaul said, shaking his huge head, and the seriousness of his expression deflated Isval. Don't call in anything yet. Least of all, Belkor.
What is it? Cham said warily.
There's a village there, Cham. Isolated settlement. All rustics. All Twi'leks. I didn't see so much as a calm array. They...
What did Vader do to them?
Isval snapped. Nothing, Gaul said. They...
Nothing!
Isval repeated.
What do you mean, nothing?
Let me finish a sentence, Isval, Gaul said, and Isval clamped her mouth shut. They're all gathered in the village center. It's like a celebration or something.
Isval understood. Gaul had said they were rustics. The villagers don't know who they are. To them, they're just guests.
The harshness of life on Ryloth had established certain norms in Twi'lek settlements. Among them, hospitality to strangers. That didn't extend to Imperial forces, of course, but some settlements had been isolated for so long, they knew almost nothing of the Empire. It appeared Vader and the Emperor had stumbled into one of those, and the Twi'leks there had taken them in.
Show us,
Cham said. Syndulla had told him to set down because he had found something, but Belkor didn't answer to Syndulla. He needed to keep looking, not just for Vader and the Emperor, but for Mors. He wouldn't fly out of calm distance from Cham, but he'd darn well keep looking.
Up, down, he said to Ophim's corpse, which was already beginning to stink. He thinks I'm a fishing lure.
I'm not, Ophim. I'm not!
He realized he was sweating, maybe feverish, and talking to a corpse. The sound of the rain beating down on the bubble for the last half hour had given him a headache, and his thoughts flowed like mud.
Just get through the next few hours, right?
Right, Ophim!
Belkor flew the recon bubble at the height of the forest canopy, moving slowly, the elaborate scanners on the ship pouring over the landscape below and the sky all around. Nothing, nothing, and nothing. He checked his clock, seeing how much time he had before the comm hub got a dish operational and overrode the jamming signal. Time was running out. His head would not stop hurting. And they had found nothing. Well, not nothing. Cham had found something, but Cham hadn't told him what it was.
He doesn't trust me, Belkor said to Ophim.
He tried to raise Cham on the encrypted comm, but Cham wasn't acknowledging.
Belkor slammed the comm against the palm of his hand and shouted, "Pick up! Pick up! Pick up!"
In frustration, he threw the comm against the inside of the cockpit's bubble. It bounced off the clear plastic and slammed to the deck. He immediately regretted his action, fearing he'd broken his only connection to Cham. He cursed and giggled and cursed more. He realized he was having some kind of fit, an attack of anxiety or stress or something. His heart was racing, and it felt like someone was driving nails into his skull. He took some breaths, tried to gather himself, managed to at least get himself under some kind of control. And when he did, he decided that he'd had enough orders from Cham. The Twi'lek was too slow to act, too methodical, and he wasn't keeping Belkor informed. He said he had a lead on Vader and the Emperor. Good enough. Belkor would see what that lead was. He already had the recon bubble running dark. From the outside, in the night and rain, it would be invisible to the naked eye.
Still hugging the treetops, he sent his location, speed, and direction to his V-wings so they could keep pace with him and stay in contact. Then he set off in the direction he knew Cham to be.
Let's go see what he's found, Ophim.
Moores operated the scan in the transport. The officer flying it stayed close to the top of the trees, but not too close. The transport was not an agile craft. If they caught a thick limb, a ship showed at the outside range of Moores' scanner, bringing her to full attention. She activated the comm and hailed Steen.
You seeing that, Steen?
Moores looked in the direction of Steen's transport, even though the dark and rain prevented her from seeing it except on scan. Steen's voice carried over the comm.
It's a V-wing, ma'am. No doubt one of Belcourt's. And here it comes.
Moving fast, said the officer flying the transport. Moores really should have tried to memorize his name. Hail him, Moores said, trying to keep her voice calm. Neither Moores' shuttle nor Steen's transport was capable of winning a fight against even a single V-wing. They had to talk their way out of this, or their attempt to rescue Lord Vader and the Emperor was about to end in fire.
You do it, Steen. Belcourt's men may not respond to me.
To the pilot, Moores said, do not go evasive.
You're sure, ma'am?
Yes,
Moores said, though she clenched a fist as the V-wing closed. Its weapons locked onto Moores' shuttle. Alarms started to wail.
He has weapons locked,
the pilot said unnecessarily.
This is Major Steen Borkus of the Equatorial Communications Hub,
Steen said over the comm, his voice calm and commanding.
Power down those weapons and identify yourself immediately, V-Wing.
The V-Wings in Atmo lights came into view, closing fast. The agile fighter flew straight toward the shuttle and transport.
I say again, power down and identify yourself, V-Wing.
The weapons lock stayed hot, so Moores played the card she held. She could not imagine Belcourt had told the V-Wing pilots the whole truth.
V-Wing, Moores said, are you assisting with search operations for Lord Vader and the Emperor? That's our purpose here. Acknowledge.
The V-Wing buzzed over and passed the shuttle and transport, the telltale hum of its engines audible even through the shuttle's bulkhead. Moores let herself exhale.
Say again, transport,
the V-Wing pilot said. Moores decided to dive in altogether.
Son, this is Moff Delian Moores, and I asked if you were assisting in the search for Lord Vader and the Emperor, both of whom are on the ground somewhere near here. And they are on the ground because their Star Destroyer and then their shuttle were destroyed as a direct result of action by Imperial traitors. Specifically, Colonel Belcourt Dre. Do you hear me?
Quiet over the comm.
Son, I hope you understand me. And I hope you realize that this is all going to come out eventually. Belcourt didn't tell you about Vader and the Emperor?
A long silence. Then,
no, ma'am.
Son, there will be an investigation like we've never seen. The Imperial Security Bureau, Stormtrooper garrisons, all of it. Listen, I don't know all of what Belcourt told you, but you should believe none of it. And unless you're also a traitor, power down your weapons now and communicate with no one other than us. Acknowledge.
The next moments turned a few more of Moores' hairs gray. But finally, the V-Wing released its weapons lock.
Acknowledged. Ma'am, this is Wing Leader Aram Minsa. And Belcourt told us you were the traitor. And I guess I was willing to believe that. Maybe a bit too willing, as I owe Belcourt. But I know Major Borkus's reputation, and there's no way he's involved in treachery against the Emperor. What's going on here, ma'am?
A slow-motion assassination attempt,
Moore said. But we're going to stop it. Tell me what you know, who's out here, where Belcourt is. Everything.
The V-Wing pulled into formation beside the transport and the shuttle.
Yes, ma'am,
said the pilot. Soon Moores and Steen knew that Belcourt was in a recon bubble and had a total of 6 V-Wings flying a comm ladder as they looked both for Moores and for Vader and Palpatine's crashed shuttle. She learned, too, that Belcourt had told the pilots that they would probably end up having to attack a ground target based only on coordinates, and that when he gave the order to attack, they needed to move fast and ask no questions. Finally, she learned that Belcourt had abruptly changed the search area a short time earlier. From that, Moores drew the obvious conclusion. Belcourt has assets on the ground, she told Steen over the comm. More traitors, or maybe a rebel group. But either way, they have a lead on the Emperor and Lord Vader.
Could be,
Steen said, though he sounded skeptical.
We need to get to Belcourt,
Moore said, and knew the recon bubble scanners would pick up their approach long before they picked up Belcourt on their own scans. Belcourt could easily evade them. Besides, they didn't know exactly where he was. All they had were his last known coordinates, and they knew that he was still within comm range of Meensa's V-Wing.
Send the V-Wing,
Steen said abruptly.
Shoot him down.
Maybe, Moores was thinking. But I'm thinking not. We need to get to the Emperor.
If Belcourt is working with a group on the ground who are trailing the Emperor and Vader and we shoot down Belcourt, the group on the ground may still get to him.
He's just an elderly man, Steen. They can't be moving very fast.
Right. I see your point.
Moores raised the wing leader, trying out another idea.
Meensa, will your men take your orders even over Belcourt's?
Ma'am, we all owe the Colonel in one way or another, but yes, they'll obey whatever I tell them.
Good, then listen to me. You're going to keep doing as he's ordered, but we're going to stay with you, and you're going to keep us apprised of what's happening as it's happening. And then, when he calls in the attack, you're going to give me the coordinates and delay your arrival.
Delay, ma'am?
I need to get there first, get the stormtroopers on the ground. Then you fly in. Tell your men whatever you have to. Tell them to take a recon pass at first. They'll see the stormtroopers. They'll see Lord Vader. And then you tell them that it's Belcourt who's the traitor. Can you do all that?
Easily, ma'am.
A mist started to rise from the warm, wet ground. Crouched low, Cham looked down at the village nestled in the quarry below. The scene struck him as surreal. Vader and the Emperor and a helmetless royal guard sat near a fire amid a circle of Twi'leks, passing around fruits and drinking gourds. Vader was working on something he held in his hands. Music carried up from the bottom of the quarry, a lilting melody played by woodwinds and drums.
You won't believe this,
he said, and handed the macro binoculars to Isval, who came away with the same baffled expression that Cham knew he must have worn. Gaul took the macro binoculars from Isval, surveyed the scene, grunted, and handed them back to Cham.
Even with sniper rifles, that would be a difficult shot, Gaul said. And we don't have sniper rifles.
What do we do?
Isval asked Cham. Cham looked at Gaul, then nodded at the torchlit path that led down one side of the quarry.
Can your troops get down the side without alerting anyone?
Those paths are half cut into the quarry wall, Gaul replied, eyeing the path. Between that and this mist, I think we could get down the path unseen, yes, assuming no one comes along for a nighttime stroll.
But unless the mist thickens, as soon as my people hit the bottom of that quarry and start heading for the village, they'll be there for all to see.
Right, Cham agreed. One thing at a time, though. One thing at a time.
What are you thinking?
Isfal asked. Cham could hear the edge in her voice, her need to do something now that they had Vader and the Emperor in their sights.
I'm thinking we get Gaul's people in position, and then we wait, he said.
She bit down hard, as if trying to wall off words she knew she shouldn't say.
Finally, she burst out, Wait for what? They're right there! And so are 36 innocent people,
Cham snapped.
Our people, backward or not. I send Gaul's team, what do you think happens? I call for Belkor's V-wings to hit these coordinates, and what happens?
Isfal just stared at him, her fists clenching and unclenching.
It's late,
Cham said soothingly. The villagers will return to their home soon. We watch where Vader and the Emperor go. Everyone has to sleep, even them.
Then we move in, quick, precise. No one gets hurt but them.
Then this is over. Gaul looked from Cham to Isfal, back to Cham. Isfal finally gave a nod.
If this mist gets too thick, we won't be able to see the bottom of the quarry from here.
One thing at a time, Cham repeated.
I'll have my troops start moving down,
Gaul said. His words were half question, half statement. And Cham nodded. After he'd gone, Isfal held out her hand for the macro binoculars.
I'll watch.
Figured, Cham said. I need to talk to Callan anyway.
About what?
She asked. About exits, Cham said. He watched for a moment as Gaul's fighters crouched low and started crawling single file down the cutout path that led down to the bottom of the quarry. Then he moved off into the trees and raised Callan on the comm.
Cham,
Callan acknowledged.
Don't argue with what I'm about to say, understand?
Yes, all right.
Cham exhaled, then said it.
I need you to leave now, fly back, and start an organized retreat of our forces into the mountains. See to the dispersal of the people and materiel we have left.
I don't...
You're interrupting.
Right, go on.
The Empire will have troops on the way to Ryloth already, and they will lock down this system and scan every millimeter of the planet's surface. Like nothing we've ever seen before, Callan. And you know they'll find every hidden base we have. And they will turn Twi'lek over to the Imperial Security Bureau by the hundreds. Our people need to start getting clear now, break up into their constituent cells. They know the process. You know it too. Go start it.
A long pause, then.
All right, I will. See you on the other side, Cham. What's happening there?
We found them. Now we just have to kill them.
Cham cut the connection and hailed Phelan.
Go, Cham,
she said.
Stay where you are and stay on this frequency. You're all right out if something goes sideways. We'll have to pack and double. I sent Callan on another mission.
Understood.
Cham returned to Isfal's side. She was standing beside Gaul, staring through the macro binoculars down at the village, at their prey. Gaul's people had worked their way well down the path.
There's no one from the village anywhere near the path's bottom, Isfal said. They're all in the village center.
Good, Cham said. Did you see what Vader's working on?
No, Cham said. Can you tell? It's a communicator, Isfal said. An old one, but no mistaking it.
An old comm isn't going to cut through Callan's jamming signal.
Agreed, Isfal said.
Incongruous to think of him working on a communicator, though, Cham said.
Makes me wonder who he was before he put on that suit.
Isfal put down the magnifiers.
Let's peel it off his corpse and find out.
Belkor realized that he was humming to himself as he flew along in the recon bubble,
some song or other from when he'd been a lieutenant. Somewhere throughout the course of the day, he'd come to the conclusion that he was going to die, and nothing he could do would stop that now. He accepted that. But he'd also concluded that he wanted to take Vader and the Emperor and Syndulla and his foolish group of followers out first. Everyone would remember his name for generations to come.
And why not, Ophim? He said to the corpse still strapped into the seat beside him. He wondered if he'd completely lost his mind, but then figured that people who'd gone insane never wondered if they'd gone insane.
Still humming, he pored over scans, knowing the general area where Syndulla had to be. In short order, he'd found them. A large group of life forms grouped around some kind of small canyon.
There you are, he said,
and accelerated toward it. Vader barely heard the music of the Twi'leks and couldn't touch the food. He was among them, but apart from them. His armor and his power and his understanding put him as far away from these people as a distant star. They were ephemeral, passing, and unable to touch him. He focused on the communicator, his hands working the tools, cleaning the circuits, connecting the fibers, the whole of it, a meditation.
That is amazing,
Drua said, watching him work. Vader pieced it back together and handed it to the young Twi'lek.
It's done.
You fixed it? Drua asked. Just like that?
That isn't what I said,
Vader answered, though Drua didn't take his meaning. He hadn't fixed it to make the device function. He'd fixed it to ensure he'd feel nothing while doing so. He'd fixed it to exercise his own ghosts. No doubt his master had told the Twi'lek to bring him the communicator for just that reason, too. The young Twi'lek powered up the communicator, not knowing, as Vader said, that the jamming signal would prevent it from picking up any communications. She spun it through several frequencies. Suddenly, the device squawked to life, and the girl grinned.
Hey! Listen to this!
She had the communicator turned to an unsecured Imperial frequency, used to direct commercial shipping. And Vader heard a droning voice giving instructions to an inbound freighter. He sat up straight, surprised, realizing right away what it meant.
It appears communication is back up,
the Emperor said. Then to Deez,
Sergeant, if you wouldn't mind, please transmit a hail on the Moth's secure frequency.
And if the Moth is the traitor?
The Emperor chuckled.
Delian Mors is many things, Lord Vader. Lazy, hedonistic, nihilistic. But she is not and never will be a traitor to the Empire. And after today's events, I suspect that she will begin correcting her weaknesses. Proceed, Sergeant.
The Emperor told Deez the code for the frequency. Deez turned the old communicator to the secure channel, available only to Moths, and transmitted a hail. The Emperor said to Vader,
This will all be over soon.
Vader looked around at the Twi'leks, all of them smiling, eating, singing, ghosts. All of them, ghosts. The sudden crackle of comm static almost startled Mors out of her seat.
Comm is back up, ma'am,
said the pilot.
Yes, I hear that,
Mors exclaimed and raised Steen.
Steen, send my thanks to your people back at the hub. They're hours early.
Will do, ma'am.
Incoming message, ma'am, the pilot said. The channel is locked, ma'am. I can't respond.
Mors checked it and saw that the transmission was on the secure channel reserved for Moths.
I'll take it,
she said, and input the code that allowed access.
This is Moth Delian Mors.
To whom am I speaking?
This is Sergeant Erston Dees of the Royal Guard, and I am hailing you on behalf of Emperor Palpatine.
Morse did not recognize the voice.
The Emperor and Lord Vader are at the following coordinates and require immediate extraction.
Morse could hardly believe what she was hearing.
You get those coordinates?
She asked the pilot.
Have them, ma'am, said the pilot.
Sergeant Dees, Morse returned. We believe the Emperor and Lord Vader are in danger. If possible, remove them from their current location and hail me again on this channel with the new coordinates.
Understood, Moff Morse.
We're on our way, Morse said.
Belcor flew high above what he now realized was an old mining quarry. A few small fires and one large one burned on the quarry's floor. Many life forms, humanoid, congregated around the large fire. He zeroed in on the scan, magnified, 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 until he could see Vader and the Emperor seated among a throng of Twi'leks. He tried to contain a giggle, but it burst out. The scene struck him as ridiculous. The day struck him as ridiculous. Another group of Twi'leks crept down the side of the quarry while a handful more remained at the lip overlooking the village. Hello, Syndulla, Belcor said. He had them now. All of them in one place. And he was going to kill them.
They deserve it,
he said. To Ophim, or perhaps to himself, he wasn't sure anymore and didn't think it mattered. He started to reach for the comm. It would be enjoyable to taunt Syndulla. But it exploded with a burst of static that elicited a little yelp from him. At first he wondered if he was imagining it. The communications hub couldn't have repaired the third dish that quickly, could they? He stared at the squelching comm set for a few breaths, his chest rising and falling, sweat beading his forehead. If the comm was back up, then what?
What does it mean, Ophim?
He asked. He reached slowly for the communicator, stared at it a moment, activated it, and then hailed the hub.
Do you copy?
Static. Then,
this is the Equatorial Communications Hub. We copy. Identify.
Belcor dropped the communicator as if it were on fire, then hurriedly grabbed it again. He transmitted the coordinates of the Twi'lek village to the V-Wing leader.
The traitors are on the ground there. There's a Twi'lek village at the bottom of an old quarry, and many Twi'leks along the side and lip of the quarry. Kill everything. No one is to escape. Acknowledge.
A long moment passed before the wing commander said,
Acknowledged, sir.
Belcor wanted to see it all for himself, so he decreased his altitude and waited for the V-Wings to start the slaughter. He would have joined them if the recon ship had any weapons. Unarmed as it was, all he could do was enjoy the show. And he could still taunt Syndulla. Cham's encrypted comm buzzed. He activated it.
Go,
he said to Belcor.
Guess what, Syndulla?
Belcor said, his tone vaguely frantic.
Calm is back up!
Cham felt his skin flush.
What?
How do you know that?
Try it!
Belcor said.
Go ahead! It's all crashing down now, Syndulla. Not just for me, though. Get ready.
Cham activated his comm and hailed Callan, who by then would be far too distant to hail if the jamming signal was still working.
Callan, do you copy? Callan!
I copy,
came Callan's startled reply.
Cham!
Cham cursed, cut the connection, and looked to Isval beside him. She looked stricken. Gaul stood next to her, his thick arms crossed over his chest.
Calm is back up,
Cham told them.
We have to go then,
she said.
and nodded at the village. My people are in position, Gaul said.
Cham nodded.
Gaul's fighters lined the path leading down to the quarry's bottom, ready to move in on the village. Gaul remained with Cham and Isfal to provide fire support and coordination from up top.
He has a calm, Cham, Isfal said. Vader does. We saw it. They'll send for rescue.
We're out of time.
Cham shook his head, trying to assess things clearly, though his thoughts were jumbled.
No, we have a little time. No one is close.
We don't know that, Isfal said. What if someone is? This is our one chance. This is the whole point of everything.
Cham looked down on the village, the Twi'leks, the women and children. He shook his head.
Not yet, he said.
Chapter 18.
You have to do it,
Isfal said, but she could hear the lack of conviction in her voice.
It's now or not.
Cham looked down on the village for several beats, his eyes pained.
Cham,
Gaul asked gently. Go or no go? Cham didn't turn his gaze from the villagers.
We go, but
we fire warning shots.
What?
Gaul asked.
Cham,
Isfal said.
I'm not firing on Twi'leks,
Cham said.
They'll flee into that mine shaft when the warning shots come. That's why it's there. It's a safe hole. Probably lets out somewhere in the forest.
We won't have surprise,
Gaul said, leaving the implication unspoken. Isfal spoke it, though.
You'll get some of our people killed. You've seen what Vader can do.
She hated herself for saying it, but knew it needed to be said. Cham's face twisted in an expression she'd never seen him show before. Pain, rage, despair, all of them lived in his eyes. He was weary, she saw.
Don't you think I know that, Isfal? But our people signed up to fight and maybe die. Those villagers didn't.
We're freedom fighters, not...
He trailed off, shaking his head.
Not what?
Isfal asked.
Think about what we're considering here,
Cham said.
Having V-Wing strafe a village of Twi'leks? Imperial pilots killing Twi'leks on our orders? That's what we're talking about. Think about that.
Isfal didn't have to think about it. Cham's words hit her like a punch. She thought of Ryan, the other girl she'd saved over the years. She imagined girls like them in the village, just stuck in a bad situation, in the wrong place at the wrong time. She'd been convinced that strafing the village was the right thing to do, that killing Twi'leks was worth it to get at Vader. Her skin warmed with shame and she bowed her head.
It's all right,
Cham said to her. She looked up at him.
No, it's not.
We all lose ourselves sometimes, Isfal,
he said.
We just have to find our way back.
And all at once, she was reminded why Cham was so important to the movement and to whatever came after. He'd fought the Empire for years, hated what the Empire stood for, no less than she did, but always his hate and his methods were informed by his principles. She loved him. She admitted it to herself. He was a freedom fighter. Nothing more, perhaps, but assuredly nothing less.
We could still walk away, she said,
though the words came hard. He shook his head immediately.
Pock,
he said.
Crossed, Drim, Viral, Eshko, Div, Mirsil, Nordon, Krev.
He went on for a time, naming every member of the movement who died that day. And once more, Isfal understood the weight he carried and labored under.
For them, we can't walk away, he said. This can't just be worthwhile. A Star Destroyer is worthwhile.
This has to be worth them. And that means Darth Vader and the Emperor. You were right about that all along, Isval.
She searched for words, found none, and instead put her hand on his.
Gaul cleared his throat. We can put some fire behind the villagers, give them time to get into the tunnel. But what if Vader and the Emperor run too? Then where are we? They could take the whole village hostage, or just flee through that tunnel. What if they run, Cham? Do we let them go? Or do we take the chance we hit some villagers?
We won't have to take a chance,
Cham said. Then he and Isval spoke at once.
Vader won't run.
Gaul looked them in the face, nodded, and raised his wrist comlink to his mouth to issue orders to his men.
Sometimes it's possible for a decision to be right and wrong at the same time,
Cham said.
Yeah,
was all Isval said, all she could say. When Gaul gave Cham the nod that his men were ready, Cham pulled out the encrypted comlink and raised Belkor.
Belkor, have your V-wings hit these coordinates on my mark.
I think I will,
Belkor answered, sounding almost giddy.
But I think I'll do it now.
No, on my mark, Belkor, not before.
I can see you, Syndulla,
Belkor said. Now he was giggling.
I can see you! And you're going to burn with the rest of them! I don't answer to you anymore!
Cham heard the telltale sound of V-wings knifing through the atmosphere. They were already close and closing. Cham cursed.
Warning shots!
He shouted to Gaul.
Now! Right now!
Belkor watched his scan as his ships flew in toward the village. He saw them come into scanner range, flying low and fast over the trees. In a few seconds, they'd scorch the earth. He couldn't stop grinning. He felt like he should caper, but the cockpit had no room for it. Instead, he danced a little in his seat. And then he noticed something odd on the scan. Two additional ships, a transport, and a shuttle.
What are those? He asked.
Those shouldn't be there, Ophim.
He hailed the wing leader.
Mainsai, I'm seeing two ships accompanying your wing. Identify them.
No response.
Mainsai, identify those ships.
A hole opened in Belkor's stomach. A hollow space that started to expand and fill with doubt.
What's going on here?
He hailed the transport and received no response, so he tried the shuttle. That vessel responded. And when he heard the voice on the other end, he had trouble breathing for a moment.
Hello, Belkor,
said Mors. Cham stared down at the quarry, hoping he was doing the right thing. As Gaul raised his wrist comlink to his mouth and called down to his crew,
warning shots to scatter the villagers west. Then move in on Vader and the Emperor, not too close. Air support is incoming.
Gaul's team filed down the path in a crouch and darted along the quarry's floor, using old rock piles as cover, shooting as they went. They fired at buildings or aimed high, the red lines of their blasters riding lines in the mist. Cham heard the surprised shouts of the villagers carrying up from the floor of the quarry. Several of the rough-hewn structures caught fire from the blaster shots, the flames spreading quickly. One of Gaul's fighters must have flung a grenade toward the village, not close enough to harm anyone, Cham presumed, but close enough to rattle the walls of the quarry and panic the villagers. At first, the Twi'leks milled around in the village center. There was shouting, there were some screams, and a few braver villagers climbed to the roofs of nearby buildings to get a look out into the quarry. Some of those fired wildly at the oncoming soldiers, but none came close to hitting anyone.
Cham watched it all unfold through the macro binoculars, hoping that the villagers wouldn't stand and fight, hoping that he wouldn't have to call off the V-Wing strafing run. He watched, encouraged, as several of the Twi'leks started to sprint toward the mine tunnel. The adults herded children and assisted a few elderly.
"Keep going," he whispered.
Soon the other villagers started urging their friends and families to flee. Cham could see them gesturing at the tunnel. A few pulled at Vader and the Emperor, and Cham froze, fearing they might run into the tunnel too. He held his breath. Drua tugged at Vader's cape. All around them, the Twi'lek villagers were shouting, screaming, fleeing. A few fired off into the darkness at the unseen attackers. Flames rose into the sky from two burning homes.
"Our hunters have finally caught up with us,"
the Emperor said, standing and straightening his clothing. Dee stood before him, shielding him, rifle readied.
"Come on," Drua said. "Both of you! There's a safe place."
"We should retreat to the tunnel, my lords," Dee said. "Reinforcements are en route."
"Oh, I think not,"
the Emperor said. Vader pushed Drua away.
"Go,"
the Emperor commanded her. Drua looked surprised, then angry.
"Go, girl,"
the Emperor said again. And she ran away along with the rest of the remaining villagers.
"You'll have to do this yourself, my friend,"
the Emperor said to Vader.
"I can't be seen using the Force before so many witnesses."
"I will stay at your side, my Emperor," Dee said.
Vader ignited his lightsaber.
"That's it,"
Isval said, looking through the macro binoculars. Darth Vader and the Emperor and the lone royal guard stood alone in the village center, the firelight turning their shadowed forms into dark ghosts. A thin red beam extended from Vader's fist, his lightsaber. Isval could hear the V-Wing streaking in.
"Cham, the villagers are clear. Tell Belkor to have the V-Wings level the place. It's just Vader and the Emperor. We have them."
Belkor opened his mouth, closed it, opened it again, but words seemed unwilling to abandon his teeth. He was flushed, sweating. Finally, he stammered, "Moff?"
"You tried to kill me, Belkor, and you killed hundreds of your fellows."
"No, no," Belkor said. "This is all a misunderstanding. I was..."
"Do not insult me further, Colonel. And don't do yourself any more dishonor by pleading your innocence. I know everything that you did. You have to pay."
Emotions boiled over in Belkor. Anger, despair, hatred. He wasn't even sure he had a name for the rush of feeling. Instead, he screamed into the comm, spraying it with spittle.
"Pay! What about you? You should pay too, you fraud. You should pay for your negligence, your laziness, for your drug use, for your slaves, for your own treachery against the Empire. I was a traitor today. You have been a traitor your entire career. You should pay too, Mors."
"I will pay. I am paying. But I'm not covered in blood, Belkor. You are."
Belkor looked over at Ophim's bruise-colored corpse, the gaping head wound he'd put there. He nodded in resignation. He was covered in blood. Realizing it, acknowledging it, he suddenly felt boneless, like he was made only of liquid. He sagged in his seat, the weight of the day too much.
"Because of that,"
Moore said,
"you have to pay more than me."
To his enormous surprise, Belkor felt more relieved than anything. He did need to pay. He did.
"What are you going to do then, Moff?"
he asked, his voice little more than a whisper. Turn me over to the ISB. To Vader?
No, Belcore. I'm not going to turn you over to the Security Bureau or Vader.
One of the V-Wings diverted slightly from the rest of the group and blazed toward the recon ship on an attack vector. Belcore nodded and sighed. He didn't even think of running. It would have been pointless anyway. A recon ship had no chance of evading a V-Wing.
No, you couldn't turn me over to them, could you? He said. I might tell them things you don't want them to know.
It's all over, Colonel.
Thank goodness, Belcore thought.
Goodbye.
The V-Wing closed. Belcore's comp blared an alarm when the V-Wing gained a weapons lock. He took his hand off the stick and sat back in his seat. He looked over at Ophim's corpse.
I'm sorry, Ophim.
His computer screeched a warning that the V-Wing's weapons were active. Belcore closed his eyes. His world exploded in fire. Isfal, Cham, and Gaul ducked instinctively as a ship exploded overhead into an orange fireball. Cham already had the encrypted comm to Belcore in his fist. He activated it.
What was that, Belcore? Belcore!
No response. A V-Wing knifed through the sky overhead, cutting through the cloud left in the sky by the explosion. Several more were swooping in behind it.
Have them strafe the village, Belcore! Just tell them!
That was a recon bubble, Gaul said, causing Cham to trail off.
What?
Cham asked him. The ship that exploded was a recon bubble.
No!
Isfal said, despair creeping into her voice.
It wasn't. Was it?
Cham squeezed the communicator so tightly his knuckles hurt.
Belcore, do you read? Belcore!
Nothing.
And Cham knew that it was all coming undone. Mors was well within visual range when Belcore's ship exploded above the quarry, shooting orange and red streamers across the sky. Mors felt ambivalent as she watched the V-Wing knife through the fire and smoke. In some ways, Mors had made Belcore. She supposed it was right that she was also the one to unmake him. She sighed and turned her mind from the colonel and his treachery back to events at hand.
We land to either side of the Twi'lek forces in the quarry, she said to Steen. None escape. Send a contingent of stormtroopers to secure the Emperor.
Aye, ma'am.
Attack wing,
Mors said to the V-Wings.
Take a visual pass of the quarry rim and surrounding forest. Weapons are loose for anything you see there. Do not fire into the quarry, however.
She figured anything outside the quarry was either Imperial traitors, Twi'lek forces of the Free Ryloth movement, or Twi'lek natives. She didn't distinguish among those groups for purposes of targeting.
Setting down, said the pilot,
wheeling the shuttle down in front of the Twi'leks, who descended the side of the quarry and were advancing toward the native village.
Behind them, cutting off their retreat, Steen's transport landed. Before the transport even hit the ground, the passenger doors were thrown open and the stormtroopers started leaping out, blaster fires spitting plasma. Half of them sprinted back toward the village to find the Emperor. The Twi'leks turned to face them as the doors to the shuttle opened and the stormtroopers on Mors' ship rushed out, rifles hot. The Twi'leks were caught in a crossfire. Lines of energy lit up the bottom of the quarry. A handful of shots came from somewhere above and to Mors' right, presumably from along the lip of the quarry. The V-Wing screamed through the sky overhead without firing a shot at the village. Where did those other ships come from?
Isfal asked, firing down at the transport and shuttle that had landed to either side of Gaul's team and puked stormtroopers. The quarry's floor was alight with blaster fire. Shouts carried up through the night air.
Gaul's people were trapped, pinned down. She saw Vader bound out of the village at a run, lightsaber in hand. "See him," she said.
"See him," Gaul and Cham said.
They fired by turns at Vader, at the stormtroopers. Someone from the quarry's bottom returned fire, the shots pinging off the stone and sending Isfahl and Gaul back from the edge for a moment. Cham just kept firing, his jaw set, his eyes fixed.
"They're cut off!"
Gaul shouted, returning to the lip to fire.
"We have to get down there or extract them! Get Phalen and the shuttle over here!"
"She'll never make it through the V-wings," Isfahl said, and Cham knew she was right. The men on the quarry's floor were dead, or soon would be. Cham resolved to hurt the Empire as best he could before he died.
"Everything on Vader," he said. "Focus on him."
The three of them poured fire down on the dark shadow and the glowing red line he carried. Mors watched through the cockpit viewport, impervious to small arms fire, as soldiers on both sides shouted orders, fired their blasters, and died. The Twi'leks dropped to their bellies or knees and divided into two groups, each firing in a different direction, while the stormtroopers ran toward them in a crouch, firing as they came. Twi'leks screamed and died. Stormtroopers hit by blaster bolts flew backward or spun to the ground, their armor blackened by fire. Mors sat in her seat and watched it all unfold. It could and would end only one way. The Twi'leks were surrounded. She looked up, saw the V-wings turning sharply to come back in on an attack vector. They must have found something along the top of the quarry at which to shoot. Movement outside the ship caught her eye, and when she saw the source, it caught her breath. Lord Vader strode heedlessly through the crossfire, cape flowing out behind him, his lightsaber cutting the air before him, deflecting dozens of blaster shots back at the Twi'leks, killing one, another, another. He did it all almost casually, as though his mind was on other things. The black lenses of his helmet were fixed upward at the rim of the quarry. As Mors watched, Vader exploded into motion, moving at a preternatural speed that left her mouth hanging open stupidly. Vader was heading directly for the side of the quarry, which was too steep for an ordinary man to scale. But Mors knew she wasn't looking at an ordinary man.
"Who is that?"
the pilot asked softly as both of them leaned in their seats to follow Vader's progress.
"Is that?"
Mors nodded.
"Darth Vader,"
she said, and pitied the person or persons upon whom Vader had fixed his gaze.
"Those V-wings are coming back around," Gaul said,
firing down to the quarry at Vader, who was sprinting across the quarry's floor, coming on so fast that Cham would not have believed it had he not seen it. Isfahl had both pistols out and aimed, firing red lines at Vader. Cham was shooting as fast as he could too, but Vader's blade was faster, deflecting every shot, sending fully half of them back at Isfahl and Cham and Gaul, causing them to duck and cover. When Vader reached the steep walled side of the quarry, he bounded up, caught a hold on some protuberance or other, crouched, and bounded up again.
"That's impossible,"
Gaul muttered, but he kept firing. Isfahl knew better. She'd seen what Vader could do. Nothing he did surprised her. And now, he was coming for them. They kept firing, leaning out over the lip of the quarry to fire down the steep side. But Vader's lightsaber turned the air red before him, and none of their shots so much as touched him. He leapt from one spot to the next, ascending, pausing only for a moment upon landing to tense before leaping again and ascending farther.
"How is he doing this?"
Gaul shouted. Vader's cape flowed out behind him as he came, and he looked to Isfahl like some kind of mythological being, some dark spirit of death
come to take a tithe of lives. She couldn't let him take Cham's. The movement needed him, and he had a daughter. She wouldn't.
Get out of here, she said to Gaul and Cham. She looked down past Vader to the floor of the quarry. The firefight was already slowing. Gaul's fighters were dying or dead. She could hear the V-Wing streaking back toward them.
Get out of here, she said. Now!
Cham seemed not to hear her. He was firing rapidly at Vader, his teeth clenched, his skin flushed.
Gaul! Get him out of here!
She turned and looked back to see the V-Wings bearing down on them. Gaul followed her gaze, turned and saw the ships incoming.
Come on, Cham! Gaul said, grabbing him by the shoulder.
I'm not leaving! You go!
Vader leapt up again, again. His eyes were fixed upward on Isval, on Cham.
Go, damn it!
Isval shouted.
You have a daughter, Cham. Think of Hera. Take him, Gaul. Remember our deal. Go!
She stood up, making herself plain to Vader.
What are you doing?
Cham exclaimed.
Get down, Isval!
She turned and smiled at him. Not a half smile, a full one.
I'm thinking through an exit. I love you, Cham. Now get out of here!
And with that, before Cham could say anything, she ran along the lip of the quarry away from them, firing at Vader with both blasters as she went.
Isval!
Cham called after her, but she ignored him. He loved her, too. He had for years.
Do you remember me?
Isval shouted down to Vader, still firing at him.
Do you? I saw you on the Perilous before I blew it to hell!
The sound of the V-Wing streaking in sounded like a scream.
Come on, Cham!
Gaul said and pulled him up by his collar.
Now! Right now!
I'm not leaving her!
Cham said, looking at Isval, trying to shake himself loose from Gaul. Above, the V-Wings were roaring down on them. Gaul finally heaved him up, flung him over his back like a knapsack, and started running for the tree line. Cham cursed him, tried to shake himself free. But Gaul was even stronger than he looked, and Cham might as well have been a child.
Isval!
He shouted. Blaster fire sounded from above them, the V-Wings opening fire. Trees splintered and cracked. Huge chunks of dirt and stone exploded. And the concussive blast of the V-Wing's firepower caused Gaul to stumble. Rocks pelted Cham, most of them small, until a large one caught him in the temple. He saw sparks and turned dizzy. Gaul seemed to be moving in slow motion. Distinct sounds disappeared, replaced by a dull roar. Everything went black. Vader bounded over the side of the quarry, standing in the smoky aftermath of the V-Wing's strafing run. The wind billowed his cape, and Isval could hear the rhythmic work of his respirator. She was 8 meters from him. The man, or god, or whatever he was, who'd done repeatedly what no one should have been able to do.
You should be dead, she said, her voice hoarse. She holstered her blasters.
As should you,
he said, and his voice was as deep as the quarry. He deactivated his lightsaber. She thought of Pock, of Eshko, of Nordon, and everything in her boiled over at once. She shouted and rushed him, drawing a knife as she came, knowing even as she did that she'd never get close enough to use it, but hoping somehow to take him by surprise. Of course she didn't. No one took Vader by surprise. How could they? He raised a hand and somehow stopped her altogether. Her body would not respond to her mind.
It was as though he held her in a giant fist. She felt her body rise, lifted off the ground, felt the knife fall from her grasp. Vader turned his head slightly sideways, eyeing her, and made a pinching gesture with thumb and forefinger. Her windpipe closed, and she could not breathe, could not even gag. She stared at him as her body screamed for oxygen, hoping to pierce him with her eyes, with her rage, with her hate. Her vision went dark, narrowing down into a tunnel at the end of which stood a dark figure in dark armor with his hand raised. In seconds, she couldn't see. She could hear the slow, steady beat of Vader's respiration, but could draw no breath herself. The world went dark. Cham opened his eyes. He was in a ship. Phelan's ship. He felt it go airborne as he left Isfahl behind. As he left everything behind. "No," he muttered. But it was done. She was gone. Everything was gone. He stared at the bulkhead, not really seeing it, not really seeing anything.
"What happened?" Phelan called back from the cockpit. "Where is everyone? What happened, Gaul?"
"Just fly the damn ship, Phelan," Gaul said. "Cham, you all right? Are you hit?"
"Are they dead?" Phelan asked. "Is everyone dead?"
"Fly the ship, human!" Gaul snapped.
"They are dead," Cham said, his voice dull and gray. "Everyone is dead. The movement is dead. Isfahl was dead."
"Don't say that," Phelan said, shaking her head. "Don't. That's not right. We're still here. We're still here."
"Stay on top of the trees, Phelan," Gaul said. "With the comm back up, this area will be crawling with Imperial ships soon." She didn't say anything but did as Gaul asked.
"What are we?" Cham said. "What are we, Phelan? A swarm of insects trying to sting a rancor?"
"You're not thinking clearly," Gaul said. "That's grief talking. I've seen it before."
"Have you?"
Cham snapped at him.
"Have you really?"
"She was my friend too, Cham," Gaul said. But she'd been more to Cham than a friend. And all of it had gone unsaid until the end.
"You shouldn't have listened to her,"
he said to Gaul. "Of course I should have. And you know it. You have to carry this forward, Cham. You're the only one who can."
"She knew that. That's why she delayed Vader. You know that."
Cham did know it. On some level, in some way, he knew she was right.
"What do we do now, Gaul?" Phelan asked. "Where am I even going?"
Gaul stared at Cham. "Cham, what are we doing next?" Cham thought of all he'd lost that day, not just Isfahl, but the many others. He'd thought of the men and women he'd lose in the coming days when the Empire put Ryloth under its heel and questioned every suspected rebel they could find. He knew it would never end. Ryloth was just another obstacle to the Emperor and his plans. Tomorrow another world would be ground to dust. Then another. The Empire was a machine, and its gears would just keep turning, grinding away at freedom until there was none left in the galaxy. Someone had to keep fighting against that. Someone had to make them pay for that, for Isfahl, for every life they took in their fixation on order and control. Cham could not quit. He could never quit. He'd just paid the dearest price he could imagine. The Empire could do nothing more to him. He'd fight. Fight them forever. And without remorse, and without pity, and without quitting. Ever.
We get as many of our people clear of the system as quickly as we can, he said. Then we get out of here. Callan should have already started the withdrawal. Then...
He paused, and Isfal's face appeared in his mind's eye, her fierce eyes, her smile. Not a half smile, but a full smile. The one he'd keep close to him forever. His eyes welled, but his conviction didn't waver.
Then what? Asked Phelan. Then we fight, Phelan. We damn well keep fighting.
Plans would come later. For now, the resolve to carry on the fight was enough. Gaul grinned and thumped them on his shoulder hard enough to hurt.
You heard the man. We fight!
Isfal came back to consciousness on her knees, her wrists behind her, bound with some kind of restraint. Stormtroopers called out orders to one another. They moved through the quarry shooting any of the free Ryloth troops that still survived. She was the only one they were taking prisoner, it seemed. She imagined herself being subjected to interrogation by Vader and tried not to think too hard about it. The fact that she didn't see Cham anywhere gave her hope. She told herself he'd gotten away. She'd thought through an exit. His. The Emperor stood before her. An old man in dark robes, his jaw hard, his eyes as sharp as knives. Beside him stood Darth Vader, looming and dark. Stormtroopers stood in a loose ring behind him, their white armor ghostly and dark. A royal guard stood just behind the Emperor, his helmet gone, his face inked with tattoos, the whole of him covered in grime.
She fears I will turn her over to the ISB,
the Emperor said to Vader, his voice surprisingly gentle.
There are far worse things than that, my dear.
I don't fear you at all, she said.
I think that's true, he said. I should have expected nothing else. But you also understand very little.
Isfal stuck out her chin.
I understand the Empire lost a Star Destroyer and hundreds of troops today. You lost them to us.
True, he said,
the frustrating hint of smile lurking in his words.
Very true. You know what I've lost, but do you know what I've gained? Have you considered that?
You've gained nothing,
she said contemptuously.
You barely escaped with your life. Oh, my life was never in danger, dear girl. But since you seem unable to understand what actually happened here, I will tell you. Everything that happened today happened only because I allowed it to. True, your sorry little movement struck its blow, but it did so too soon, before the time was ripe, and before it was mature enough to pose a serious threat. And now it's exhausted itself and will grow into nothing. What's left of it after today, do you think?
Hearing an echo of Cham's words come from the mouth of the Emperor was too much.
Shut up,
she said, looking away and hating herself for the tears that welled in her eyes. You don't know what you're talking about. Cham was left, she told herself. He at least was left.
Ah, she begins to see now,
the Emperor said.
Perhaps you thought the events today would spark a rebellion? Ah, you did.
He laughed contemptuously, the sound gouging itself into Isfal's brain.
That was never going to happen, my dear. Your little movement was a candle that I encouraged you to light, and now... It has gone out, igniting nothing.
He knelt and looked her in the face. His eyes were as empty as a corpse's.
Nothing.
He stood, looking down on her.
Lord Vader.
Behind him, towering and dark, Vader ignited his lightsaber. Isfahl heard her death in the sizzle of its blade. The tears in her eyes dried, replaced by defiance, by anger,
by hope kindled in the knowledge that Cham at least had escaped, that the fire of rebellion had not gone out because he carried it.
She stared up at Vader unafraid.
I hate you and everything you stand for, she said. But when I murdered out of love.
Vader raised his blade, his breathing loud and steady. When he spoke, his voice was as deep and hollow as a funeral gong.
I know precisely what you mean.
He slashed. Her decapitated body fell at Vader's feet. He deactivated his blade.
There's work for that yet, my friend,
the Emperor said, nodding at the hilt of Vader's blade.
Master?
The villagers, Lord Vader. Drua and her people. We can't allow so many witnesses to live. I'll wait for you here.
Vader looked from his master to the dark mouth of the mine, inside of which Drua and the rest of the villagers had fled. He felt the Emperor's eyes on him, the intensity of the gaze, the weight of his expectations. And Vader knew that the day's events had been only half about depleting a rebel movement before it could grow. They had also, as Vader had suspected, been about testing him, forcing him to face the ghosts of his past and exorcise them forever and fully. He saw that more clearly now. Saw, too, that his master was right to administer the test. It also explained why his master had shown so little of his true power throughout the day. Perhaps he'd wanted Vader to rely on himself to overcome the challenges they'd faced. Or perhaps he'd wanted to seem weaker than he was, to draw out any treacherous ambitions Vader may have held.
I hear, and I obey, Master.
He ignited his lightsaber and strode toward the cave, his mind drifting back to another day. A day when he strode into the Jedi Temple filled with nothing but younglings. He'd slaughtered them then, and he would slaughter the Twi'leks now. His master's laughter followed him into the cave, and it lingered in his mind, louder even than the screams of the Twi'leks, as they began to die by his blade. When it was done, he returned to his master's side.
Well done, old friend,
Darth Sidious said. He wiped his hands as if to clean them of dirt.
And now, let's move on to more important things.
This is Jonathan Davis. We hope you've enjoyed this unabridged production of Star Wars, Lords of the Sith by Paul S. Kemp. This program was directed by Kevin Thompson. Executive producer, Aaron Blank. Star Wars, Lords of the Sith is a production of Lucasfilm Limited and registered or trademarked where indicated. Copyright 2015. All rights reserved. Used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music publishing by Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Bantha Music. Music master production copyright 2007, Lucasfilm Limited. This has been a Penguin Random House audio presentation. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.